much we could do. There's so much we could know.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for December 18th, 2020.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
On today's Ecologic, save the oceans and they'll save us. The health of the world's oceans affects the health of all of us.
Amy, please introduce yourself and tell us about your organization.
With Clean Water Action, we're a national organization, and we work on water, but we work on more things than just water. It's the things that get into our water, like pesticides, toxics, and other things. So I'm very excited to be here, and let's get on with the show.
Tell us about the dead zones in the oceans.
Well, these are places where basically life can't live very well. In fact, life doesn't exist hardly at all because of either low oxygen content or nutrients or pollution. You often think about dead zones where coral reefs are, where they get bleached by the acidity of the water, changing conditions so that life as it used to live can't thrive anymore.
And there are different causes of them, right?
Right. There's very different causes. It really depends on whether you're out in the deep ocean or you're in a coral reef, which is closer to shore, or you might be in an estuary. An estuary is the hatcheries area that you often see you know, cactails and shallow waters. It just, again, all varies because of different reasons and climate change making all of it worse and exacerbating an existing problem.
How does the dead zones affect us? How are they? Where are they? How prevalent are they?
Well, some of them are I don't want to say permanent dead zones, but some of them are just, they're not recovering. There are others that are, they may not be officially called a dead zone, but they're seasonal. So the dissolved oxygen in a little cove suddenly disappears because there's an algae bloom and hot weather in the summer, and all of a sudden you get a huge fish kill. So while it's not sort of a permanent dead zone, it is a dead zone for the fish that had no more oxygen left and suffocated. So they're all around the world. They're all shapes and sizes. And some of them are virtually non-recoverable, while others are on a seasonal basis.
We know that there's a lot of different sources of pollution that would create this, correct? And
yes.
create the topic of the show is today is about the health of the oceans. What we know that there's the plastic solutions is something, plastic pollution is something that people are very well aware of. There's also industrial and agricultural runoff. I know that you've really focused a lot on that with your work. Could you tell us a little bit more about what we can do? Our show is a lot about solutions as well as presenting mm-hmm. the problems. So what is being done and what can be done? Mm-hmm. Why is it and what can be done?
Right. So there's a number of things, as you said, number of different sources of pollution, right? So you could have agricultural runoff. You could have industrial runoff. You could have lawns. You know, a lot of people like their lawns. Or if you're on the Jersey Shore, a lot of people have these pebble lawns. And the reason why they're just pebbles is because they pour pesticides and herbicides all over them to keep the weeds out.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, there's lots of different causes. There's factory farms, you know, the chicken farms that are up and down the Chesapeake Bay, you know, that are, so there's raw sewage and treated sewage. All of these contribute to the life and hardship of the oceans and bays and the like. But there are solutions. So in the case of agricultural runoff, there are a number of practices that could be employed to, you know, you could always go organic. That's one way to go. The other is, in my area, simply moving the manure pile to a different location on a farm so it doesn't end up in the stream that ends up in the river. Changes, you know, the ecological, you know, and the E. coli levels dramatically. So some of it is fairly simple, and some of it is, you know, on a bigger scale, like going from primary treatment of a sewage treatment plant to doing, you know, tertiary treatment, to actually, you know, biological breakdown. Separating the sewers from the stormwater is another activity. Doing green infrastructure, like you've been seeing more in urban areas where you're doing more greenery along the streets or making pocket parks. All of these contribute to reducing the use of pesticides, fertilizers, or capturing more water and keeping it on the land rather than having all the pesticides and fertilizers leach out. In New Jersey, we actually passed a law probably 8 years ago that reduces the amount of phosphates in fertilizers. And so when you're applying it on your lawn or if you're having a, you know, a company come and do your lawn care, they have to use it at a prescribed time. They have to use less of it. There's less in it. So if you really want your green lawn, you can do it with less chemicals. So lots of different strategies, either at the home level, the industrial level, the agricultural farm level, that can make a really big difference to the ocean.
Distressing to hear about the pebble lawns because I thought that was actually an improvement over the green lawns with all the chemicals, and apparently it's not.
Well, you know, a lot of times they put down like dark plastic and then they put pebbles over it. And one problem with that is that by putting the plastic down, you're actually making the ground impervious.
Right.
And then, you know, over time, the plastic starts breaking down, then the weeds start coming up, and then people start walking around with their Roundup and other things spraying. You know, it's a grave concern. And if you're in the state of New Jersey and you notice those little flags that are on your lawn or on somebody else's lawn, that's actually the result of my organization's work probably 30 years ago. That we got the right to know in our state so that you can actually be informed that there's pesticides and you can make a choice to walk or not walk along with your pets and
or your children
on your children, right, on those lawns, right? So they have to.
Yeah, I've noticed that on the back of my mother's landscaper's bill, and, you know, she kind of ignores it, and I look at it and go, oh, my God, what are they doing?
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
She pays the bills, so I have to keep working on the education.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Too many of us don't think that we can affect the vast oceans of the world. But there's so many little steps that you just listed that everybody can do that will make a difference. Every time you make sure that that there's no runoff in your community into the river or the waterways, you're doing a service.
Right.
So,
and, you think about the storm drain that's on your street, you know, that water goes somewhere, and whether it goes to a sewage treatment plant or not, eventually it ends up in our rivers, bays, and oceans. That's where it ends up eventually.
Yeah. We talk more about that when we do a show on the on the pipes in New York and how the runoff goes into the river. Getting back to the oceans, I would like to talk more about the stuff that's the good news that's happening in the world right now. We were quoting and researching an article, and Ken, you might want to talk some more about that. Where 14 nations of the world were coming together to form a united front. I think it was 40% of the world's coastlines around the world, and how each of those 14 countries, none of them, the four major countries, U.S. is not part of that, but how...
Or Russia.
Or
China. Or China. Or France. And,
but those, somebody has a list of those 14 countries, mm-hmm. but those 14 countries are brilliant. It's like the difference between grassroots and the big greens. It's all the small countries coming together and making an impact, saying they want to have everything cleaned up by 2030.
Yeah, we have a link to that organization on the ecoradio.org website, and if you go to the website, you'll see a map of those 14 countries, so you'll know who they are and where they are right away. And before we get to what those 14 countries are doing to improve things, especially economically, one basic question I think a lot of people have, or their relatives or coworkers might have, is why should we care? We live on the land. Why should we care?
Well, why should you care? Well, most of the world is the ocean. And the ocean is, because of climate change, the ocean is going to be, you know, literally in your bedroom in the near future, especially if you live, you know, in a state like New York, or, you know, if you're downstate in New York, or if you're in New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey is a peninsula, if you really think about it. And we're going to be, you know, underwater, as is most of the world in one way or another. So, and a lot of our food comes from the ocean in one form or another. And if we don't take care of it, we will be overrun by it, as we are already being overrun by one storm after another, or one tsunami, or one monsoon after another, and it's only getting worse. So if we take care of the ocean, it will take care of us, and it is more of the world than we are of the ocean. So.
And it gives us half of our oxygen. So yes. Every other breath that you take, that air comes from the ocean.
The other thing is, for those who eat fish, you know, a lot of our species are being overfished, and unless we clean up their environment and stop, you know, contributing to the destruction of it, they won't be there for not only for themselves, but for our own consumption. You know, you can only fish so much, and then they're gone. And yeah,
right. And there are many people who, you know, have less financial means and live on the water. And so fishing, you know, is not just a livelihood, but it's a way to feed their families, and it's their principal means of protein. So if we, you know, if we don't take care of the fish, not just in numbers, but also, you know, if they're full of plastics or they're full of toxics,
yeah.
You know, we move that up the food chain, you know, whether it's a bird eating it or a person eating it, you know, it harms the entire chain, both in reproduction and quality and ability to survive in the future. All of these being vitally important.
So what are those 14 countries doing to fix all this?
Well, you know, they've gotten together to create a voluntary agreement, and their goal is to get 100% sustainable management within the national jurisdictions of those countries by 2025, and to protect 30% of the the oceans by 2030. Currently, only about 7% are being sort of officially protected. And the things that they want to focus in on is this overfishing and illegal fishing, but also plastic waste and this issue that we started the whole program with was about dead zones from farm runoff. So these are the things that they want to tackle and want to make progress on. And these countries, you know, think, you know, are so vitally concerned about this because, you know, this is part of their culture. You know, if you look at the countries, if you look at Southeast Asia, you know, the Scandinavian countries, these are countries that have not just fisheries, but they have a whole culture, an economy that's wrapped around the sea. And these countries are like-minded in their commitment. So that's why they didn't want to wrangle with countries. They wanted to move forward and do something positive where countries that were more like-minded would more likely work together and make some progress.
What I found interesting is that in the past, Japan has not been interested in such a program, and yet it is part of this group, and that's kind of an encouraging step forward.
It is, because they've been famous for, like, having their factory ships going out and just, you know, scarfing up all the fish and then processing
right.
them. You know, many countries do this, but they've always been famous for that. But it is so embedded in their culture. If you think about all the foods that they eat and the like,
sure.
and, you know, and the island that they are. Right?
Yeah.
And if they go within international waters and infringe upon another nation's fisheries, there's very little. Once in a while, you hear about it, but there's very little consequence for them.
Right.
Here we are once again relying on the goodwill and paying attention to the law of people who have a financial interest. Sound familiar?
Yeah. Sally, you had pointed out to me some interesting economic aspects of the document that the report they issued. About that when they discussed the economics of the ocean, the huge multinational corporations were not included.
Right.
They're making
yeah.
this report without them.
Yeah, the high level panel on a sustainable ocean economy is a project apparently of the World Resources Institute. And looking at who is involved in the World Resources Institute, there are a lot of the corporations, but not all that many, and a lot of scientists and academic folks who don't have that economic interest. So that could be quite interesting.
They made
so
the report
a whole
without
lot more than just, you know, that group tackles a whole lot more than just the oceans, which is a huge enough project on its own. So, I mean, we really need these big things to move at scale, because while we can do things on our own, you need to policies and the big overarching goals, I think.
Yeah, the climate, the Paris Climate Accords have more corporate input than this ocean panel had, which is you know a nice sign with the sheer importance of the ocean to the survival of human beings on Earth. It's nice to see that kind of forward thinking progress.
And also, if you look at the nations that signed this voluntary agreement in 2018, you know, if you look at the countries in this, you know, Southeast Asia, you know, they're not part of the G10 or whatever the number is, eight or
right.
I don't even know what the number is these days. But
yeah.
You know, they have other interests and other concerns. Yeah.
A couple of them are island nations that are likely to be underwater.
Right. Yeah. They're disappearing quickly.
Yeah.
And in the 2 minutes we have left, give us contact information for Clean Water Action.
Sure. You can go to cleanwateraction.org. We're in 16 different states, on the East Coast, the Midwest, New England, and West Coast. So cleanwateraction.org, and you can look us up and look for the state or look for me in New Jersey. We're on Facebook as well, so you can look for us there. Mm-hmm. We're always doing actions and events, and we're the action of Clean Water Action. We were founded by the writing and passage of the original Clean Water Act, hence our name, Clean Water Action. So we're all about action.
And, the Clean Water Act was championed by Pete Seeger in the Clearwater.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I don't know how healthy we'd be without the Clean Water Act. That's for sure.
We've got a lot of shared history here.
Yes, we do. A lot.
One recent step forward in New Jersey was passing, although it's going to take a while to get into action, the ban on the single-use plastic bags.
Yes.
So hopefully that'll keep some of our plastic out of the ocean.
Right. It's plastic bags, polystyrene or polyfoam, straws only by request, and actually paper bags were included as well. It's the idea to move away from single-use disposables towards reusables. And we have a program called Rethink Disposable, and it was started in our California office, but it's a really exciting program that we're doing that helps small businesses save and institutions and schools save thousands of dollars on all these throwaway containers. So if anybody's interested in exploring that, you go to rethinkdisposable.org and you can learn about some of the case studies of small businesses and restaurants and food truck vendors that all save money by using reusables.
Repeat that website.
Remember, rethinkdisposable.org.
Thank you, Amy. This is exactly what we want for our listeners. We want to give them something that that they can do, that they can work on, and that is functional. So, boy, we really are running out of time, aren't we? There's always more information than there is time, and we will continue to put on this conversation and put up the discussion on our website. We will be sending out a notice to our email list when it is up, so please, those of you online, go to www.ecoradio.org and please.
We just gave you a lot of information. So we just to listen to the show again, go to our website, www.ecoradio.org.
You can get environmental news on a variety of topics by going to www.ecoradio.org.
That's www.ecoradio.org. Next week, our show will be the Ecologic Collective Convenes. We know the environment is important to you. That's why you listen to Ecologic, and we appreciate you. We need to know you're there and that the appreciation is mutual. Please show us. We need you to feel and know that this listener-sponsored radio station is yours. Here's the way to show your responsibility and your love for WBAI and for Ecologic and help keep us on the air. Yes, you have that much power. That's what we're all about. This show is to show you what power that you have. We know you want to hear more about environmental news, so.
This is how. Go to www.givetowbai.org to get any one or more of our terrific premiums by putting eco-logic in the search box in the upper right corner. Also, we would like to encourage each of you to become our buddy. Just go to www.givetowbai.org. Go to the BAI Buddy page, and on the drop-down box, click on Ecologic and pledge a monthly amount, any amount. Think of what this show is worth to you. You have our sincere thanks.
And a big thanks to our wonderful engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gillard.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Friday at 2:30 p.m.
Our inexpensive energy source.
Give me the warm power of the sun. Give me the steady.
WPFW Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. The United States has logged its second worst day of the pandemic after shattering records just one day earlier. On Thursday, the U.S. recorded over 233,000 new infections and nearly 3,300 deaths. Intensive care units in Southern California and other parts of that state report they've run out of ICU beds. On average, two people are dying of COVID-19 each hour in Los Angeles. Meanwhile, lawyers representing patients at Southern California's largest psychiatric hospital are demanding the release or transfer of hundreds of people amid a massive outbreak that sickened nearly 700 patients and killed 10. The lawyers described the state-run Patton State Hospital as a tinderbox for COVID-19. Vice President Mike Pence received the COVID-19 vaccine on live TV this morning in a move designed to instill confidence that the newly approved shot is safe. Pence, his wife Karen Pence, and Surgeon General Jerome Adams took turns getting jabbed at the Eisenhower Executive Office Building near the White House. They became the first high-ranking White House officials to receive the vaccine, developed by Pfizer and BioNTech, and just approved for use in the United States a week ago. More than 1.1 million Georgians have voted in twin U.S. Senate runoff elections that will determine which party controls the Chamber of Congress. The surge in turnout after 4 days of early in-person voting and about 4 weeks of mail-in voting showed that voter participation in the two races is on pace to rival the records set in the November presidential contest. Voting in the Senate runoffs ends on January the 5th. Members of the billionaire Sackler family refused to apologize Thursday as House lawmakers grilled them over their role in fueling the devastating opioid epidemic. The Sacklers own Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. The company pleaded guilty last month to 3 criminal charges, including bribing doctors to write more prescriptions for the highly addictive drug. Sackler family members have not been criminally charged. This is Massachusetts Representative Ayanna Pressley addressing David Sackler.
We do not need another failed war on drugs. What we need is a reckoning and accountability for drug companies who put profits over people and rob us of lives and freedom of our loved ones. You have created a nationwide epidemic. 450,000 people have died. Let me be clear. People struggling with addiction are not criminals. Your family and Purdue Pharma, you are the criminals. You are the ones who disregard your duties to society, and you should be ashamed of yourselves.
Thursday's hearing came as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported the U.S. had more than 81,000 overdose deaths over the past year, the highest number ever recorded, and 20,000 more than last year. Black children were 6 times more likely to be shot to death by police than their white peers over a 16-year period, according to a study published this week in the journal Pediatrics. Latinx children were 3 times more likely to be shot to death than white children, the study found. Researchers say their work adds to a growing body of data on the racial disparities black children face compared with their peers. Currently in Washington, it's mostly cloudy and 36. In New York, it's cloudy and 30. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
Stay tuned for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott coming up. This is WBAI New York. 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It is now 3 p.m. Stay tuned.